Thank you for listening to Coach Your Brains Out by Gold Medal Squared. Quick warning, we had some audio issues with this episode, so the sound might dip in and out a little bit at times, but there's so much great stuff from Ryan, so hopefully you can adapt. Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Today, we're excited to welcome on the show the head coach at Baylor University, Ryan McGuire. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
John, Billy, thanks for having me.
Wanted to congratulate you on another incredible year at Baylor. What you've done with the program is just, it's unbelievable. I know your first year was 5 years ago, and you guys didn't quite make the tournament. And now, 5 years later, you guys were the overall number one seed. You make the Final Four. I mean, it's unbelievable. I can't think of another program that's been able to do that. I'm wondering what you're most proud of in this 5 year run.
You know, I'm always proud each year when you see great growth in the athletes. And to me, it's special on twofold, because even the first year we made the tournament, you know, there were seniors on that team that had never been to the tournament at all. And just to see the thrill and joy of the work paying off and how they've matured in order to get there was great. And then you have the freshmen that really kind of came in after that first year that worked hard and were able to go to the tournament every year. I'm proud. We are really based on servant leadership, and we graduate six seniors that all had significant roles on the leadership side. And for us, the leadership is how they serve one another. So they have really impacted the team and the program in ways that just make me really proud of them. Some grew in confidence, some grew in humility, some grew in unselfishness, you know, and they definitely all grew as volleyball players, but they did a wonderful job just bringing out the best of one another and overcoming the coaching this year. So it was good.
Really cool. Congratulations. Today our topic is adaptation, and it seems that adapting to the ever-changing personalities of your players has been one of your strengths. Why is that something that's important to you?
You know, I think we're all uniquely and wonderfully created and made and have different qualities, different strengths, different weaknesses. And a lot of that's just kind of built into our DNA and who we are and where we come from. And I think I've always just paid special attention to really not trying to change athletes, but really build off their strengths and, you know, minimize some of those weaknesses. And, you know, there's just a fascination for the sports psychology of getting to know the different personalities, and just how we communicate with one athlete is going to be completely different with another. You know, I got to be aware, some girls you can really get on and they like that and it motivates them. And some girls, I may not even have an issue with them. They're doing really well. But if I'm speaking too loud towards someone else, that almost makes them feel a little uncomfortable just because of who they are and how they're wired. So to be able to put a team together like that, to me, is really fun. And, you know, you're trying to have one goal, but everyone's taking on different roles and finding ways to bring the best out of one another. I think as a little kid, I loved the Lakers and just, you know, I see what Pat Riley did with Magic and Kareem, different personalities. And you look at how Kobe and Shaq, two great athletes, but completely different personalities, but found a way to be champions. And you know, that's just something I find passion in.
And what tactics have you used to adapt when you have incoming athletes to your program? It sounds like you're going to have a lot next year, losing, I think you said, six seniors. And what are some challenges when, you know, you're working with people you're just getting to know?
I think it's you got to give them some time and grace. First off, it just starts about letting them feel free to fail and getting to know their personality. You know, we're all different learners. We learn in different types. And, you know, there's hundreds of personality tests out there. And I've probably dipped into all of them. But really finding what motivates. My goal, my hope is athletes come here, we're trying to find a motivation of permanence, one that's unwavering. And, you know, so you got to find out, they're all coming from different places, and some maybe just want the scholarship, and the scholarship's here, and now it's okay. Now what? Others have goals of going on to the Olympics and playing beyond. What can we do to maximize today to help them for their future goals and dreams? And then others just don't even know. And so I think you gotta pepper them with some questions and be maybe a dream releaser for them and start painting the picture of what their future could look like. And I see, you know, what gets them most excited and what do they get most passionate about, and try and gear it towards those things and those dreams in that. So I think our job as coaches is to help athletes get where they can't get to on their own, and to listen where those passions are. And for me, that's just part of hopefully trying to be a blessing in their life and, you know, point them in something that's going to be meaningful. And, you know, in times like these right now, we can't play volleyball, we're not competing, but we can still have some pretty meaningful lives. And hopefully our athletes, they're frustrated they're not practicing as much as they want, but they know volleyball is just a small part of the picture.
I like that term, dream releaser. That's a good one. But I actually, on the topic of the coronavirus, I'm wondering, you know, and we're talking about adapting. Obviously, adapting is a huge key right now. So I'm wondering, how have you guys adapted with all the changes that the coronavirus has brought?
I think we're still trying to figure it out. You know, for us, we were all on spring break when it kind of hit. And I think our athletes are shifting from spring breaks really over to now we got to start studying online. They all really want to work hard. And, you know, I think maybe when I first got here 5 years ago, I couldn't say that about the team, but they're hungry for next year. So now it's really self-driven within the team, and it's more a matter of letting them figure it out and whatever NCAA will let them do and collaborate and do those things. You know, I think boredom is a lost virtue with so much technology and entertainment flashed at us. But I'm kind of a little excited to see what comes out of this with our team, because I think sometimes when we're stuck in some boredom, where it unlocks and opens some creativity in areas that we may not have touched. And so just in calling and contacting with our girls, some of our girls are finding some new joys and passions that they – you know, they did as a kid. You know, one incoming recruit just did a hike today and couldn't stop talking about how beautiful it was and how much he enjoyed that. And, you know, we'll remember that. There's places to hike here. And now I know when she gets here and it's a stressful week, maybe we'll just go to Cameron Park and hike the trails for 20 minutes. And that might be one of the best ways for her to decompress. So, but I don't know. I'm still figuring out. This is new territory.
And so are you doing like daily check-ins, or how do you stay connected with the team when you guys are so far away?
We're kind of all hands on deck with staff, and between all the apps we have on our phone, Teamworks and GroupMe and Microsoft Teams, we're checking in pretty good with them. As a staff, we still meet once a week, and we're looking for updates and any red flags if anyone's struggling or feeling left out. Or, you know, we review everything from our academics to the strength and conditioning program that the ladies are working on, and then any fears and apprehension. So far, so good. And yeah, it's hard for me because everyone's so gone. You know, my fear is someone slips through the cracks, but. We have things in place between our staff where everyone's hitting it each group each week, but a lot of it also still triggers spontaneously where we just enjoy talking with our team and checking in. So somebody might post something, we all see it, and most everyone responds.
Billy, what are you doing with your extra free time with no volleyball?
I'm writing a lot. I'm plowing through a book. I'm supposed to be doing some garage workouts, and I did one today, but the motivation has been a little lower.
Ryan, have you done anything that you hadn't done? You know, being a coach, you're so locked in on the day-to-day stuff. Have you added anything to your life?
I'm trying to build a train garden at our house. So we spent a lot of money at Home Depot. I feel money's kind of bleeding out of me right now for all those stay-at-home projects. Did a little off-roading with the family. the other day. So we just got muddy spinning some ATVs through the trails. Riding is something, you know, in my mind, I look forward to doing more so in retirement, but I think I'm starting to get back into that. It kind of took a pause once I was a head coach again here at Baylor. But yeah, I got so many projects at home that I enjoy doing that I finally have time for. Probably finally finished my daughter's treehouse too.
Nice. So
it did rain heavy and there were more leaks than I care to admit, but
but you tried.
John, have your neighbors complained about all the drumming yet?
No, because they don't come outside. So
okay.
Yeah, I think they just, bought some new headphones. But yeah, I've been playing a lot more music, which has been nice. But definitely miss being around the team and just having a clear mission every day. So hopefully we all get to get back to it soon.
So Ryan, let's say you did check in with some girls and you do see some red flags, or maybe a coach that's listening, you know, has a player that's struggling with something. I guess how would that conversation start when you're trying to get them to adapt and handle those stressful situations?
You talking about currently, or maybe
currently? I don't know if you've had any conversations about it, but just yeah, it could also be taken as just general advice for coaches listening.
I think kindness is a lost virtue, but kindness also has a real steady backbone to it, and there's a truth. I don't think you can separate kindness from truthfulness, and so the girls know that we love them and care for them as coaches. I think it's hopefully been evident and demonstrated what we're doing outside of the court, as well as just the things we're doing within the court. So with that said, you know, to be as crystal clear, and if there's actions or behaviors that are detrimental, I think they know that it's coming from a place of kindness. You know, the question I ask myself if before any difficult conversation, you know, am I saying this in a way that is for the athlete's benefit? You know, sometimes they can make mistakes and we're embarrassed as coaches, or we're angry and we just want to let off some steam. And that's maybe not always for their benefit and how we say it and how we phrase it. But we talk about early on that adversity is important for us to grow. And sometimes that's going to be in the conversations we have. I can honestly say this past year was a drama-free season, and you know, to have 20 girls on a team and say there was no drama, people would accuse me of lying. But for us, drama is a conflict that's not dealt with, and so we want to trigger conflict. You know, there's sometimes girls, you know, encourage them to be conflict miners, to kind of dig in and pull some things out, but. The idea is that we just want to be assertive with one another. And when we're assertive, you know, we say we both count. You know, if I see a girl shanking a ball and if I were to just yell at her and scream at her, you know, that maybe that's aggressive. And I just want everybody to hear how smart I am and you know, this flow of knowledge on it, but it's really not helping her. I don't want to be aggressive. I'm going to be assertive. We both count. And if I were to just walk by, maybe starter, non-starter, whatever, not say anything, you know, then we're also, you know, to me, that message is saying, hey, you don't count. So that's something we talk about early on as a team. Like, hey, there's going to be conflict. We need conflict to get better. Brother and sisters born for times of adversity. And that goes back to the personalities is – if a team's afraid to have conflicts, then there's no trust there. And that trust means, you know, we have it as a staff and we're definitely not always agreeing on everything, but because staff's free, hopefully always at least gets to be heard. You know, that's important to me. There's things that I get to hear that maybe I wouldn't hear if everyone was afraid of conflict.
Yeah.
And our athletes need that same mentality, and it helps us become one a little bit closer and easier that way.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds like relationships are such a huge component of your coaching. How is it different when you coach someone who's a senior versus someone that's you haven't worked with for 4 years?
you know, it's each person is different, and I've coached men and women, and I've had guys crying on me in the corner, and I've had girls starting fist fights. So we've seen all ends of the spectrum. To me, it's growth. I think, you know, maybe it is a freshman and you're looking for baby steps and growth in just small areas. Maybe it's coachability and just, you know, are they listening to learn versus listening to respond? Is it, you know, what are they passionate about, and maybe challenging them and their consistency or reminding them of the standards. And, you know, I think as you get to know the athletes, you know, we all have different vices, temptations, things that pull us away from the game and pull us away from healthy relationships. So maybe learning how to help each athlete battle that, you know, which is different. We're definitely designed, I think, and wired to be in relationships, and my default, and I'm open with the team, is hey, things aren't going well. I get quiet. I want to pull away and just kind of think my way through it. And that's not always the best response. And so, it's, you know, they all grow. Shelly was a All-American first team for us, middle, senior, captain, and fifth-year player, got married. But, you know, as a freshman, it was probably boys, volleyball, academics in that order when she got here. leaving, you know, Big 12, two-time Big 12 scholar athlete of the year, really focused in, you know, it was, hey, what do I need to do to help the team? You know, not what position should I play to you know, help my accolades and stats. So to me, I'm, you know, one example of the type of growth that I like, but something she could, you know, handle much better as a junior and senior than as a freshman and sophomore. She had great athletes pouring into her as well. So.
And are there common personality types that you see, and I hate this term like these days, but yeah, I'm wondering if you see any that are common. And I know you said you did some personality tests, and what sort of coaching do you find that's effective with kind of the modern player?
You know, I think maybe the personalities, there's still a wide range, but the challenges that the athletes are facing, I just seem to find a lot less intrinsically confident athletes. You know, we talk about confidence does come from within, and how do you nurture it? How do you grow it? How are you able to access that when you need it most? But also, you know, for us, the idea is that the pleasure should always supersede the pressure. Like, man, we put all this work in. Like, this should be great enjoyment in what we're doing, putting all this work in. And it seems like, you know, my sense is as they're coming in, is there's a lot less self-confidence athletes across the board. And you know, I don't know if that's because they're struggling through adversity maybe a little bit less. And there's so many – you know, it's maybe just not embraced or demonstrated as much. And I think that kind of impacts the confidence. You know, when we've all overcome and struggled through and made it to the other side, it either strengthens our confidence or it at least tests our perseverance and strengthens our perseverance so that we can wrestle through things that take a little bit longer. And I've been very proud of our girls. You know, this last year we had a lot of seniors, but a lot of them really didn't play until they were upperclassmen. And their roles were just so significant. And if anything, a couple of them played less. But how they led the team was just so tremendous. And I think they had to have enough confidence, you know, to be like, hey, we're both seniors. And we both were starters at some point, and now we're not even seeing the court at all. But we're part of the number one ranked team, and if we're not starting, we're scrimmaging or against the number one team. And to me, that was huge because, you know, those are areas that can cause cracks and things fall apart. Division within your team, you know, if girls feel seniority is a priority. And I've never been that way, and I'm upfront with that. You know, it's what have you done lately still is kind of the deal. So it's a balance of good grace and good truth in that.
Yeah, I really like that phrase, pleasure should exceed the pressure.
Yeah.
What do you do when a girl tells you that the pressure is too much?
Well, I think there's progress because they've at least acknowledged it, and that takes that's a long road sometimes for them to say, like, gosh, our senior libero this year walk on and you know probably wasn't confident until postseason. All of a sudden she was passing like 2.8. It was great, but we're like two matches away from trying to win Big 12 for the first time, and she just said, Coach, I don't know what's going on. I don't feel like I can do anything right. And, you know, different athletes, you know, have sometimes different buzzwords, you know, and, you know, Dr. David Cook was our sports psych guy when I first arrived here, and he had some good things. We just talked about some positive images for her, and, you know, again, confidence is holding on to positive experience. So, you know, pull her aside and, hey, let's watch film. Watch you pass 50 balls and nails, get some tough digs and do these things. And, you know, the irony was she got defensive player of the week that she felt like she was performing the weakest. So sometimes when we're tired, we tend to emotionally rationalize things that aren't quite as accurate too. Sometimes, hey, do you have any tests this week? Yeah. Did you get your full 8 hours of sleep? No. Here's your passing numbers. You know, you're not as bad as you think you're doing.
So then what are some of your core principles at Baylor?
You know, I think technically on offense, we want the best swing possible. And, you know, breaking that down, that starts with passing. And then you can talk about all the seams and how well we want to pass. You know, we're trying to pass perfect, trying to go middle and be good errors. Follow-up is with setting again off perfect passes. We really are challenging our setter to make perfect decisions. So if we got a perfect pass, and then what is the best matchup? Who's our hottest hitter? Where's their weakest defenders and blockers? And where are we going with not so perfect passes? We're looking, hey, we got to have perfect location so the hitters can do their job and swing and best swing possible. Sometimes means, you know, hit the snot out of the ball. And sometimes maybe it's the not so perfect set. And it's like, how difficult can we send the ball over so we get the ball back? So that's offense in a nutshell. Defense, three things is serving, blocking, and digs that equal kills. So is our serve disruptive enough? Is our block, you know, changing what our opponents want to do, does it have an influence on the match? And then can we run middles off our digs? And whether we set them or not, that's up to the setter, but our digs allowing our middles to be involved. So that would be on the technical side. And then, again, getting back on the other core principles, the best leaders are the biggest servants. And so even as freshmen, you know, we have girls that came in January. I really, really challenge them. Hey, they need to be leaders now. And leaders mean serving your teammates. And, you know, it's great when we have our seniors, you know, helping them move in. Our seniors are doing the water bottles. Our seniors are the ones putting up the nets sometimes before practices and going out of their way to make the underclassmen feel comfortable. And, you know, that cycle is really starting to take hold here. And, you know, I think it adds some responsibility when they're younger, when they see themselves as leaders, where they want to be quiet, maybe to defer to better players or older players, they might think, but really try and challenge that servant leadership.
And are there any fads that you've seen that you've tried to avoid?
Yeah, I think whenever there's success, you know, you want to listen to that a little bit more. And, you know, when we're praised or we came off a good year, you normally love all of the praise you're given, but maybe don't deserve all of it. And the same's true with criticism. When you're criticized, you don't like any of it and maybe still deserve a little bit of it. So I think it's more a matter of being able to keep that hunger and maintain in the midst of being successful. You know, the group of girls we had, just a year ago, like they knew what it was like to have a losing season, you know, before I came here. And so they really, man, the winning tasted good and they're hungry and they know how quickly things could unravel. You know, I think for us, it's trying to keep the hunger, And then fad wise is, you know, we got to just stay true to who we are. And I tell the girls, we never want them to compare. You know, they're trying to be the best version of themselves. I need to be the best version of Ryan McGuire. And now that we've been successful, and I do feel a lot of programs go out there and compare. There's recruiting and, you know, hey, our program's ranked higher than their program, or this program's done better than this program. It's easy to say that when you're doing really well, but that really was not a part of us reaching this level. And I want to help make sure that's something, you know, I'm not tempted to do or because it's been done against me, you know, throw that back. But just still speak to our principles and values. Hey, servant leadership, growing in wisdom, seeing volleyball as a small part of the big picture, you know, make sure that maintains some of our timeless principles and not tout our recent success.
How does the newfound pressure and expectations, how does that, you know, affect your program and maybe, I guess probably a time to lean on your principles, but I'm wondering, you know, I think that's going to be a new thing for you guys, these upcoming years.
You know, it just goes back where we got to remind ourselves who we are and where we come from. And I think that's a big part of loving one another is just remind someone, man, John, hey, you know, your team's struggling. Like, you are a great coach. You're a great player. I never beat you as a coach. I remember just how your maturity was on the court and catch the girls from doubting themselves. On the flip side, you know, it's what do you spend your time listening to? And are you listening to those that love you, to those that know you best, or is it coming from somewhere else? You know, if we spent time in the media, is Baylor a one-hit wonder? Are they, you know, what are they going to be like when Yossi graduates? Is it just, you know, they got, like, you know, you could listen to so many, you know, everywhere you go, there's such diversity in what's being said. So, yeah, I think sticking to our values just becomes really important. And then, embracing the expectations. So we want it to be that way. So you do got to address it because it's questions that are asked that will be asked. You know, hey, you know, coming off Big 12, can you repeat? Are you going to do those things? And we're just going to speak kindness through truth. Here's what we're trying to do. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's how we're trying to go about it. And we're going to do that best of our ability in our own house and continue to take care of one another.
Sounds like a good plan. I'm looking forward to seeing it. So we talked a lot about adaptations and adapting with your players, but I'm wondering if you adapt during matches or say in a scouting report, you know, you see there's a blocker you want to expose, and you want your hitter to attack line more, but maybe their best hit is some sort of cross court swing. Do you adapt there or do you play more to your strengths?
No, I like being able to adapt. I think adaptability is a strength. You know, I want that to be a strength of our team. I like the word dynamic. We want to be dynamic hitters, you know, always progressing, always evolving, always getting better. So a dynamic hitter, you know, we talk about can elevate and they can annihilate, they can locate, they can move things around, they can deviate. You know, we say humiliate and tooling the block. In that, so I really want the hitters to be able to cut it and go wrist away to hit line and have all those weapons within their arsenal. So then, when the time is right, the line shot's open, they can recognize it and go for that right away. And I started coaching football. I thought I was going to coach junior high flag football. When I first started coaching, I did 5 years of that. And so to me, I love the offense and, you know, football, sometimes it's zone, sometimes it's, you know, man coverage. And so, you know, my hope is our offense is adaptable. You know, hey, teams are really tight bunch read. Here's what we're doing. They're releasing blockers. Here's what we're doing. You know, then coming from the men's game and doing it myself, I just love the back row attack. So, you know, 8-9 different attacks out of the back row. So, you know, teams might practice for the Bix, but how are they going to stop, you know, some 30s and 70s when middles are running this? And, It takes a lot of practice, and we know what we're confident at and what we're doing. But, you know, sometimes you can run some ghost plays, and teams will front those. And, you know, that's the chess of coaching that we all love and enjoy. And I've made many good decisions and made plenty of bad decisions. That's why I liked playing Pepperdine and Marv Dunphy, you know, being those in front until the last one. But I'll throw that in there. Ever while John was on the court.
Some good matches for sure.
From a skill perspective, what would you say have been some of the strengths of your Baylor teams?
We have passed well, and you know, we spend a lot of time just in the serve receive. I would say our overall side out game has been good. We were siding out a pretty high percentage. Our first ball kill was pretty good. So I think we've balanced the aggressiveness well by being a low error team. You know, Texas still, you know, outperformed us being low error, but we were, you know, higher kill percentage, higher, you know, side out as we were moving through the season. So I know a lot of people say defense wins championships. It's crucial. It's important. You got to train it, but you know, if we could side out every time, we'll never lose. You know, even if, you know, we're no good on defense, you can side out. So I think that's just kind of how our game is built. And again, want to be good transition. We got to score points there. And nobody's going to side out 100%. But I feel the diversity of our attack and just you know, how we receive serve was good for us the last few years.
And what are some weaknesses you guys are looking to upgrade this upcoming season?
I think we're graduating 6 seniors, and a lot of those are some liberos and DSs. So it's more we got to get back in the gym. That's why I'm most nervous, because, you know, passing's like thousands and thousands of reps. And so hopefully our girls are out there getting those that are going to move into those positions. Our slide attack was non-existent or pretty weak last year. And, you know, we were able to spread it antenna to antenna by going out of the back row a little bit, but we will have some middles coming in that I think are going to let us run a little bit more of an offense off of 1 foot at times and add that wrinkle to it. You know, I have a senior setter and I have a senior outside hitter that had pretty good years last year. And we're still adding more to them. You know, I didn't feel like they connected well on the, you know, we call them rips, the 32s. And so I'd like to see us be a little bit more efficient in those numbers. We picked up a great transfer that is hitting those exceptionally well. So I think it's helping Yossi see how it's done. And again, I like showing teams something different when you get up there in the 20s. You know, teams been bombing balls back and forth, outside, middle, right side, and then suddenly, you know, you're attacking from a different zone in the net. You know, I think those can be some quick points sometimes, you know, because teams haven't seen it yet during the match, and you know, maybe they forgot it, knowing that it's coming at some point. But yeah, I think always adding a few more wrinkles to what we're doing on offense this year.
What are some common things you see? So you said you had some new people coming in, and you wanted to work on passing. Is there something like, oh, this is the first thing or the most important thing that we find with new people to our gym when we're working on serve receive?
I think it's calm down. I think it's just, hey, you just got to get stops. And you know, we're definitely less is more, and simple is repeatable, and all things that you know, we've known for a long time. But they want to move. They have habits sometimes that they've done, and you just say, hey, calm down and let the angles do the work and be stopped. I think the swiftness of how earlier platforms pre-angled can come together is you know, they hear you, but until they, you know, you break it down and you show it to them sometimes and you're like, man, look, you know, you're running around with your hands so far apart. They didn't come together till, you know, the ball was almost on you. You know, we're trying to get them angled and together before the ball's crossing the net, you know, so they can receive the ball, you know, rather than muscle the ball back to where they want it.
And is there any way they can get reps now by not being in the gym? Are there things players can be doing in this time?
You know, touches are touches, and if you have nobody, maybe it's a pass to yourself while you're watching film. You know, how good would you be if you could just keep that touch and know where the ball's going and doing that? Visualization, I think, is huge. But yeah, ideally, I'd love to see them get in some gyms and at least have a partner or serving machine where it's, balls are zipping over the net at them and they're getting those touches and doing that. But if they don't have that, you know, I've seen the studies, and again, we all learn differently, but for the ones that can watch film and soak it in, and it, you know, it goes back to confidence. If you're just putting all these positive images of seeing yourself pass left, you know, low, pass left, high, pass right, low, pass right, high, you're kind of building a good library of places to access information on, hey, I got this, do that. So, I think reading the hitter is an area this past year we grew in as a team. And so I think in watching film and you know, trying to see how early can they anticipate, maybe know with certainty where the hitter's going to hit, you know, and talking about elbow and hand, and what's coming first and where they're leaning and where they're facing on it, you know, tight set, offset, some of those things that we've taught them. I know some of our younger girls need some more practice doing that as well. So that's something they can be watching on film and, you know, get a teammate or roommate, make it a competition, and, you know, maybe you watch 50 swings and who can guess where they're hitting where.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I mean, it's always tough to replace game like reps, but I think someone who's really intrinsically motivated, they can always find ways to get, you know, 1% better. So it's cool that you have ideas like that. So when Billy and I first got to know you, you were coaching an NAIA school called Cal Baptist out in, was that Riverside? Yeah. And you guys were able to consistently beat, compete, and we went 5 with you, I think, every year, you know, Division I programs. So I'm wondering how you think you're able to find that success at Cal Baptist.
You know, we would have beat you your senior year, but you guys said it was rained out. You pulled like sunny California. It was rained out, and then you moved the January match. That's when you moved to Libero. See, I remember it. You guys weren't clicking all then.
We weren't. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we got lucky that we pushed that back. Yeah, it would have been a.
You ended up winning it all that year, and again, testament leadership and change of positions. But no, I think that goes back to just being able to believe. I think, you know, if you don't dream it, it's not going to become a reality. And, you know, better to, you know, my hope, and I brought it here to Baylor, that the dreams that we're doing attract men and women of courage. And what we're trying to accomplish really is nearly impossible. But to me, that excites me. It makes it worthwhile in trying to accomplish and do that. You know, obviously on the men's side, we went international, a couple of great athletes from Africa. And you know, they grew up without coaches on them and coaching them every day. I think in America, we tend to be so coach-centric. And, you know, going back to the diversity enhances excellence, you know, to get different perspectives. And, you know, I really felt like, you know, managing personalities is tough and hard. But when the athletes themselves feel like they have a lot of say and a lot of investment in what's going on, it's definitely not me or the highway type deal. I think you get a lot more out of them.
Yeah, so Ryan, you have coached a variety of players and personalities, from my old roommate Seydou from Ghana to these young women from Texas. What do you think has allowed you to get the most of these athletes from such a variety of backgrounds?
I hope I'm available to listen. I hope that they see there's a genuine care and concern for them above and beyond volleyball. You know, in the recruiting, I do, you know, ultimately you do attract people who are like-minded as far as what they want. Different personalities, we want them to exist. But you know, as you paint the dreams, you want to attract those kind of people.
So Ryan, we want to end with some listener questions. We have some from assistant coach at Kansas University, Caitlin Nielsen. She wants to know, what was the tipping point for your recruiting process from getting interest to actually committing big recruits?
Not sure there was a tipping point. I think it was very frustrating when I first started at Baylor because all these clubs kept telling us, oh, these girls are too good for Baylor. These girls are too good for Baylor. And, you know, it's a little frustrating to hear. I feel, you know, part of our philosophy is we don't want to settle. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, when I talk about even at Cal Baptist, like, you know, I didn't, the guys from Ghana kind of fell out of the sky. I was not as great recruiter, just happened, but we happened to have scholarships available because I didn't just settle for whoever and be afraid of not filling a roster. I think we've developed them well, and our message was good. You know, as we got into it, when athletes came on campus, they were really attracted to how active our girls were and genuinely being invested in them. And so we don't, you know, recruiting is important to the team as the athletes because it's part of their future, because it could be a future teammate. And then if it's not a future teammate because they're graduating, you know, it's still part of their legacy as they move in. But I think once our culture was where we wanted it, it became very attractive to other athletes. I'm not sure we've had any, like, super crazy ranked recruiting classes. We definitely have had some great athletes. Those are just numbers to me. I think the goal is to build a team. So I'm a little bit more mindful of who has that engine, who has that drive, who's going to really, who is committed to bringing the best out in others rather than just how often we can tell them they're the best. And I think we've trained well and we've made some athletes that, you know, I'm not sure we've had many athletes that were ranked, you know, top 100, but, we've helped them develop into some pretty good athletes. So Yossi is special, obviously, and she was small, kind of undersized, maybe overlooked, who knows, but we were able to get the most out of her. But I think even the athletes that we had here prior to. So, you know, the challenge now, I think, is to make sure we're still attracting the right athletes that are going to keep our culture really strong and can bring those things to it. So, I'm not sure if there's any one defining moment in that. It just seemed to be pretty gradual. So I would encourage coaches to just keep working. And there's always going to be athletes that are going to surprise you. You know, we had non-scholarship athletes starting for us in the Final Four and some scholarship athletes not playing as much. And, you know, once you get them in the gym, you got to work hard and see what they're going to do. So. But still not settle.
Yeah. Caitlin also asks, what do you attribute the huge success of Baylor athletics as a whole? You know, the football team, the basketball teams, obviously you guys with volleyball had huge seasons. What's happening there as a culture to help promote success across the board?
You know, Baylor, definitely a faith-based institution. You know, my relationship with the Lord is very intertwined in coaching philosophy, and don't have to be a Christian to attend here. And we love everybody right where they're at, but, because there is a design I feel to this world, I might as well check in with the guy that designed it and go to him and his word for a lot of answers. And that's to me, the master game plan right there. Scott Drew, Kim, Matt Rule, all of our coaches. We got just, man, some amazing coaches that have really poured into me. You know, Glenn Moore, softball, been here a long time. Been doing some good things. Mac Rhodes, our leadership as an AD, has been phenomenal. And you got to remember that Baylor also, this did not make my life easier, and I didn't want it, but went through some challenges with football. You know, president left, football coach left, AD left. And so, again, it's one of those things where I think the adversity also brings you together and it weeds out those that aren't fully committed, and the ones that are all in, and you choose to persevere and go through it. I think it's a great, great thing for coaches to go through losing seasons, and it really kind of strips away who you are. Like, before all those championships at Cal BAP, you know, I went 1-19 with the women's team in conference, and it almost broke me, but I think it also made me stronger, and I probably wouldn't have had the success I had, you know, if it's just even a 500 or slightly above 500 season. So, you know, sometimes you got to get excited that the seasons are over when they're bad, but those could be areas where we grow exponentially instead of gradually, in just kind of defining what principles are really important to us in order to get better.
Yeah, that's a good way to wrap up and a good message for what's going on in the world right now, that adversity brings us together. And yeah, I think there's no more adverse time than right now that I've experienced. So yeah, I hope we can take your message and learn from it and continue to grow as well.
Yeah, definitely uncharted waters. I hope everybody out there is very, very safe and very, very wise and making good decisions, and can still find joy in finding rest in whatever their situation might be right now.
Yeah, good call. Well, thanks so much for the time. Thanks for sharing all your experiences from you know, the Cal Baptist days to now, and just so excited to see what you've been doing at Baylor, and excited to continue to follow you growing that program. I mean, I don't know if there's even much growing is the right word. You guys are already at the top, but I'm excited to continue to watch and follow along. So good luck next season, and good luck navigating all the challenges with the coronavirus right now.
Yeah, thank you, John, Billy. Appreciate it. It was fun catching up with you guys, and look forward to seeing your careers continue to do well also.